I met Vivian Poole in the Salt Lake Tabernacle when the choir was putting on the Oratorio Elijah in the fall of 1938. The choir had asked that one young man and one young woman from each ward in Salt Lake City come and work as the crowd, as the dancers in the performance of this oratorio. I was chosen in my ward as the young man, and Marion Edwin was the young woman. Marion and I had been next door neighbors practically all the time. We lived in Whittier Ward. Actually, there was a house between us, but that's all. Anyway, one day I was late getting to practice, and I was down in the front of the tabernacle below the stages that had been built, taking my coat off. It was fall weather and it was cold. I was wearing a coat. The benches of the tabernacle were covered with the coats of the other members of the cast. But while I was taking my coat off, I noticed there was a pretty red-headed young woman that I had never seen at any of our practices before. I normally went up onto the south side of the stage, but she was on the north side, so I decided to go up on the north side and figured that if this was her first time, she'd need some help. And it was her first time. She had been practicing with dancers. The dancers had been practicing at the McCune School, and this was their first night to take part in the crowd scenes. So I would whisper to her what we were going to do, and she'd follow along. Managed to get through the thing without any big problems. The cast that had been there had planned that this night after our practice we would all go bowling together. So I invited her to go bowling with us. She didn't think she ought to do that, that she'd better go home. And I couldn't persuade her, but I did walk out to the building with her. And we got out to the tabernacle and came around the west end of the tabernacle, and the sky in the north was absolutely brilliant. I said, "Oh my gosh, the children's hospital's on fire. Let's go watch." And I grabbed her by the arm and put her in my car, and we took off. We got around the corner to where we could tell, and it was not the children's hospital that was on fire, which at that time was on North Temple Street between Main and State. It was a large home back of the children's hospital. So we drove up there by it, parked the car, and got out and climbed the hill and stood and watched the firemen till they knocked the flames down. And so then I put her in the car and she went bowling with us. I was really looking forward to the next practice when I'd get a chance to see her again. And I did get to see her again and invited her to go on a date. And she didn't really think she ought to go. But, I told her, "Well, think it over and I'll give you a call." She gave me her telephone number. I really can't remember how much time went by, but when I called her, I had decided I'd invite her to go to a movie, and it was a movie she wanted to see. And we did go to the movie. That's the best that I can memory about that. We did have a lot of fine dates, going to movies, going to dances. We went to the Rainbow Rendezvous to dance. We went to ward dances in her ward, which was the 18th ward, and in the Whittier ward where I lived. Her brother was an avid hunter, and so when a time came for me to go on my first deer hunt that I have already told you about, it was right at the time of my birthday. Deer hunting season started on the 20th of October, and my birthday was on the 26th, and she gave me a sleeping bag for my birthday present. That was the first sleeping bag I ever owned, and I've still got it. I've had a couple of sleeping bags since that I used that were better sleeping bags and warmer, but I've always kept this one because she gave it to me. We had dates when we went to Lagoon, and I remember one time we'd gone with two of the fellows that I'd known when I was at BYU. We had taken our dates, and nobody had, I didn't own a car. These fellows didn't, so we rented a car. And in the renting, in driving the car around, we noticed that we knew we were getting charged by the mile, but we noticed that the speedometer backed up when you backed up. So we went out to Lagoon for this date, and then most of the way back from Lagoon, we backed up. We got on the wrong side of the street for going south and backed the car up like we were backing up for something. I don't remember how far we went, but that got old real quick, and so we turned around and drove back. One of the dates that I had with Viv was to go skiing with a couple of my high school friends. And they hadn't been able to get a date to go with them, but Vivian went, and we had a great time skiing. And after the skiing was over, we come back to town. I was driving Vivian home, and the other two fellows had gone home. I can't remember their names, and I should, but I don't. Anyway, she said, I heard so-and-so talking, and one of them said, Glenn's girl is really a nice person. I'm glad we got a chance to meet her. And she says, am I your girl? And I said, you are if you want to be, because I sure want you. When I met Viv, I was dating a nurse at the LDS hospital. I'd been to the hospital, had my appendix out. This nurse was really a nice person and helped me a lot. After I got out of the hospital, I dated her for a while. And her name was Leona Felix, and she was from Springville. She took me down for a Sunday dinner to meet her family in Springville. I met Vivian, and that cut off. I'd also been dating a girl from BYU that I'd met the previous winter, BYU. I can't remember her name, but I stopped dating her, and just after I'd met Viv, concentrated on just dating her. And I wish I could remember some of the different dates we went on. You know, one thing that about dating in that period of time was it wasn't nearly as expensive as it is now. We'd go to a movie, and then we'd go get a hamburger and a Coke. The hamburgers cost a nickel, and the Cokes cost a dime. And as a matter of fact, no, the hamburgers cost a dime, and the Cokes cost a dime. But there was this one place, if you bought a dollar's worth, you got 20 hamburgers for a dollar or a nickel apiece. They weren't huge, big hamburgers like many of the places put out now, but well, I'd go buy a dollar's worth of hamburgers, and I'd eat three or four of them, and she'd eat one or two, and then I'd take the rest home and share with my brothers. Movie tickets were 25 cents, 10 cents at the Ward movie, 25 cents at the movies that were reruns in town, and 35 cents at first-run theaters, except the Empire Theater in Salt Lake was just a small one, and it was always reruns, but it was only a dime to go to the movie. Another thing about dating Viv was I didn't have a car in those days, and Dad was good about letting me use his car. I made it a practice that anytime I took his car, I brought it back with more gas in it than when I took it. And I think that's one reason why I was always able to take the car when it was available. But there have been several times when the car wasn't available. I'd walk from Bryan Avenue or 16th South up to her place on 4th Avenue, Canyon Road. We'd walk downtown to the theater, which was close. It wasn't very far. Then we'd walk back to her place and sit on the porch and talk and kiss, hold each other, and then say goodbye, and I'd walk back to Bryan Avenue to my home. It was a 9-mile date, and I did that several times. That ought to let you know that I was serious about her. I was really impressed with Grandma Poole, Vivian's mother. She is one of God's saints. I have never known anybody as conscientious or as compassionate in my life as she was. She was just a wonderful woman. Vivian's dad was a convert to the church, and he was an Englishman, and he had his own ways of doing things. He was disappointed that his only son, Harold, was not an athlete. But I was, and he welcomed me into the family, and I'd go to the desert gym with him, and he taught me how to play handball. And it was interesting. when I was learning how to play the game, if I'd get a shot that was close to being a good shot or a bad shot, he'd tell me, "Good shot, Glenn, good shot." But after I got to the point where I was competing with him and beating him sometimes, if it was close, it was a bad shot every time. I've never forgotten that. And I played volleyball with him at the Desert Gym too, with a bunch of older men. I was the youngest one playing, but I was playing with my father-in-law, and I enjoyed that. I met several of the prominent people in the state, including the Supreme Court, Chief Justice of the Utah State Supreme Court. And he and I played handball quite a few times together. And when I came time to, I needed a job, I asked him for a letter of recommendation, and he wrote me a fine letter of recommendation that I really appreciated. I met him through handball with Grandpa Poole at the Desert Gym. Viv's oldest sister, Kathy, was married, had three little girls. Whenever I'd be up there on a Sunday and Kathy and her girls were there, Vivian and I managed to play with the children quite a bit. And I enjoyed that, and I think they did too. And they certainly have always been friends ever since. The girls are grown up and families of their own, but they still remember us and how much fun we had together. Viv's youngest sister, Pat, I can't remember how much younger than Vivian. I think six or seven, 8 years maybe, I'm not sure. But I always enjoyed playing with Pat and talking to Pat. She was still in school when I met Viv. I can't remember anything that we really did together except that I liked Pat. She was a pleasant person to be around. And of course, after we were married, I became better acquainted with the entire family. That was a good arrangement, good family. We met on the 26th of September, 1938, and by the 26th of September, 1939, we decided we were in love, and she and I picked out an engagement ring and wedding ring set, and we were engaged on the 26th of September. My mother was really disappointed. She didn't think that Vivian was good enough for me, and she was always polite, but just barely polite. I really felt badly that she didn't accept Vivian any better than she did. I think the time came when she realized she'd made a mistake, but at that time it was really a difficult situation for me. I remember there's one time that she and I went for almost a month without speaking to each other, and now I feel really badly about that because I should have known better. And she was interested in my welfare and thought that was the right thing to do to try to get us to break up, but that didn't work out. Dad, I think, felt like he had to back up Mother, but I don't think he felt about Vivian the way she did. But I don't know. I do know that Vivian went the second mile trying to make the situation better. I can't remember whether it's when I was in the Army or in the mission field. Yeah, it was when I was in the Army because Becky had been born, and Viv would take Becky and go over to Grandma's house and stay with Grandma while the aunties got a break. It was my grandma, my father's mother, Josephine Grosbeck Smith. I'll always remember my grandmother, what a feisty woman she was, how she did things her way, and she was kind, she was compassionate. She worked in the temple. She was the second wife of the first counselor in the first presidency of the church. And as a polygamous wife, she was her husband was subject to being put into jail. But to put the polygamous husband in jail, they had to catch the second wife or third, or they had to get a plural wife into court. And grandfather was never taken into court because the marshals could never catch grandmother. And I'm pretty sure the rest of that story we've already heard. But Viv and Becky would go over there and stay with my grandmother. She had fallen, broken her hip. She lost her eyesight. In those days, they couldn't replace hips like they do now, and so she was just in constant pain all the time. They didn't even have the pain control substances then that they do now. And she had practically lost her mind. And Viv and Becky would go over there and stay with her so that my Aunt Zella and my Aunt Josephine could have a break, because they had to take care of their grandma, their mother, all of the time. The year before, or almost a year before that, I had been asked to go into the mission field, and I had accepted, and then had been turned down because I wasn't old enough, and I think I've told this story before. But now we were planning to get married. We met on the 26th of September. We got engaged on the 26th of September the following year, and we planned to get married on the 26th of September the following year after that. And so we were going ahead with our plans, and I know that my parents convinced the bishop he should call me on a mission again. He asked me if I'd go on a mission, and I told him I'd have to think about it. And I told Vivian that I had been asked to go on the mission field, and that would mean we wouldn't be able to get married. This was in the summertime, and we talked about it. She said to me, "Well, I think that you'll make a better husband and a better father if you have a mission." And very frankly, I was disappointed. I thought, sure, she'd say we ought to get married. She didn't, and so I did go into the mission field. I went in a mission home in December of 1940, arrived in the Eastern States Mission on January the 7th, 1941. Now, during the time when I was in the mission field, of course, I was writing to her regularly, and she was writing to me. In the year 1941, the missionaries of the Eastern States Mission put on the Palmyra pageant. They had been doing this for I don't know how many years. Just the missionaries were putting on the pageant, so it was a regular thing. And all the missionaries in the whole Eastern States Mission went to Palmyra to put on this pageant. We were interviewed by the director and talked to about our talents and our abilities. Because of my experience in construction, I was put in charge of one of the light towers on the Palmyra pageant staff. This story has been told also that Bob, I was in the mission field. But while we were at Palmyra, at my invitation, Vivian came to Palmyra. I'll admit I broke mission rules, but it was so nice to see her, and we had a week or 10 days together. After the Palmyra pageant, we went back to Schenectady together, and she was there in Schenectady for long enough to go to church with me one Sunday, and then she took the train back home. We continued to correspond, and when she got home, she got called to the Texas Louisiana Mission. From then on, we were corresponding with each other as missionaries. And I think I've already told how after my mission was over, I went to Texas, met her, and we came home together. I've already mentioned going to Texas and coming home with her, and we got home, and I was faced with going into the service. And so we took the necessary steps to get some time together, and we went ahead and got married on April the 1st, 1943. Then I went into the service, and we've already discussed that. But when I got home from the service, I had to find a job, and I had to find a place for us to live. Viv and Becky and the twins were all living with her mother and father, and we had to have a place of our own. We searched and searched. The only job I could find was a substitute postal carrier. I could get a job as a sheet metal worker, but I wasn't really anxious to do that because that's such seasonal work. You work hard from July, August till December, and then many of the sheet metal workers would be completely out of work till the next summer. So I wasn't really interested in that, but I heard about a job out at the Deseret Chemical Warfare Depot south of Tooele, where there was government housing provided at a really low rent. So I went out and checked it out, and sure enough, there was the housing, and they were looking for a sheet metal worker. It just so happened that at that time they needed a sheet metal worker in the engineer shop. They had a blacksmith, they had a welder, they had several painters, but they didn't have a sheet metal worker, and there was a lot of sheet metal work needed to be done on the base. And they did hire me. So we moved out to the depot, the five of us. We had a two-bedroom kitchen, living room, government housing, made out of regular army barracks that had been divided into three different apartments. So it was small, but it was adequate. We had a branch of the church there, and as a matter of fact, I was asked to be the clerk of the branch. President of the Twill Estate, who had jurisdiction over the branch, sent me a real nice letter calling me to the position after I had been interviewed. I still have that letter. It was a good job. It was really a good job. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the people I worked with. Most of them lived in Lehigh or Cedar Fort or Tooele and would drive out to the base each morning and home each night. One of the men that I worked with, his name was Tom Kirkham, who lived in Lehigh. And he was a good friend of Orville Gunther, who had a sheet metal shop in American Fork. And I think Orville had mentioned to him that his business was going so fast he needed some more help. And so Tom Kirkham asked me if I'd be interested in going to work for him, moving to Lehigh or American Fork. And so I talked it over with Viv, and we decided that'd be a lot better place for raising children than it would be out on a base. And so I went to American Fork, and Mr. Gunther interviewed me and hired me, and so we moved. But before I get to that point, I ought to say something about life on the base. It was, from my standpoint, really enjoyable. I'm sure it was harder on Viv than it was on me. I enjoyed my work. I enjoyed the people I worked with. The Army would have special parties and things for the base personnel to make it interesting for them. I remember one 4th of July celebration. I was put in charge of the games. And so we had a lot of games set up for the little kids, races, sack races, hopscotch. I can't remember all of them, except we had some boxing. We had what we call GI can boxing that I had done when I was in the service. You put two GI garbage cans, which are, I imagine, 50, 60 gallon cans, 1 foot from each other, put a man in each can with boxing gloves on, and the idea is to knock the other guy over. It was a lot of fun. And then we also set up a ring for some children to box if they wanted to. And there's a lot of kids get out there and they had fun. They enjoyed it. A bigger guy come along and says, "Hey, I'd like to box. Is anybody willing to box with me?" Nobody answered, so I said, "Sure, I'll box with you." And I had been on the boxing team at BYU, and I felt I could take care of myself. I got in with it. He was half drunk. He'd swing and miss, and I'd just tap him on the nose or the forehead or the chin with my glove. I never did hit him. I never did hit him because it wouldn't have been fair, and I knew the situation. So 2 or 3 days after that, I went into the PX on the base, and he and another fellow were sitting in a booth. And when they saw me come in, I saw the one guy point to me and speak to the friend I'd boxed with. And he got up and he came over to me and he said, "I understand I really need to thank you for my stupidity out at the 4th of July celebration. You could have killed me." In our little house, I don't remember if there was a bathtub. I don't think there was. I think there was just a shower. And Viv would bathe all three of the children in the kitchen sink. I remember as the children were washed, she'd hand them to me and I'd dry them off and put their pajamas on and take them to bed. Also, at the time we were out there, there was a contingent of German prisoners of war there. And they were gradually being sent home from all over the United States, but there was a contingent out there all the time I was there. And one of them worked in the shop with me. And he made me, he was a good blacksmith. And he took a couple of pieces of steel and made me a set of tongs that I still have. I've only used them maybe 3 or 4 times in all my life, but I've always kept them because I appreciated the fact that he made them for me. And he and I became pretty good friends. And I took him up to our house and our place of abode and introduced him to Viv. And she talked to him about his family, and his eyes would tear up. And he was just a good man, though, and we were good friends. Well, then we moved to American Church Lehi, and they were sent home. And we'd been in Lehi, I guess, 6 months anyway, when we got a letter that was forwarded from the chemical warfare base to my address in Lehi, and it was from this man in Germany. And he said that how much he'd enjoyed knowing me and how nice my wife had been to him. And he said, I hesitate to ask this, but would you please, if you can, send me some chocolate, candy? My children have never tasted chocolate, and we can't get any in Germany. And I just appreciate it if you could send us some chocolate. Well, if you know your mother, they got a lot more stuff than chocolate. And I don't remember all the things she sent, but she sent a lot of things. And we got a real nice letter back thanking us. And so we wrote 2 or 3 times and sent 2 or 3 packages. I can't remember what and all, but we got a letter from him saying that he was going to have to ask us not to communicate with him anymore. He lived in Eastern Germany that was controlled by the Russians, and he was getting some flack by getting mail from the West, and he was afraid he would get into more trouble if we continued the correspondence. And I often wondered what happened to him and his family, and would like to know, and maybe in the next life I'll find out. Another thing about living on the depot was I'd get home from work and Viv wouldn't have dinner quite ready, and I'd take the twins, one in each arm, and Becky would hold on to my pant leg, and we'd go walking out in the sagebrush. We'd see rabbits and birds. We'd have a nice little walk. I remember doing that quite frequently.